You're listening live to Right Side Radio with Phil Williams. It's hard to go wrong when you're on the right side. Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right.
It sounds like Ted Nugent.
Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here live in the Right Side Studios, hour number two. We got the local, the state, the national, sometimes the international, and like the dude just said, covering down on all of it, solid, conservative, and just plain right. Well, I'm pretty stoked about this next segment. So y'all have heard me talk about the Elm Foundation for the last couple of months now. But I'll be honest with you, the things that we get a chance to see and do sometimes don't have any near the impact they could until you get somebody in studio and you can really dig down. So we're going to spend some time talking to them. The next section of the Triple Dipper, by the way, is called A Hand Up. And you've heard me say multiple times on the show, a hand up is better than a handout any given day of the week. And I got a piece here, by the way, that I pulled off of the Heritage Foundation. And it's actually called A Hand Up, Not a Handout. And it talks about the fact that Ebenezer Scrooge was all for the government getting involved. He said, where are the union workhouses? Why not let them go there? Well, the bottom line is there's one quote in that article that says, a personal approach makes a huge difference to the people that are being helped. It ensures they receive the dignity and the respect they need to help get over the tough times they're enduring. And a government check cannot look you in the eye and offer advice about how you can turn your life around. A food stamp will never help you find a job. So that being said, there's a time and a place for government assistance. I get it. But you know what? The vast majority of what we need to see happen happens with groups like the Elm Foundation. So sitting in studio with me, let me introduce them for you real quick. John Nolan. John Nolan is one of the reasons, maybe the reason, he and his wife, that the Elm Foundation even exists. He's a retired U.S. Army officer, a retired business executive. He's had his career largely focused on national or business intelligence operations. Spent a great deal of his time to include in Southeast Asia as a Special Forces Intelligence Officer. 22-year career in Intel, and then he started his own company called the Phoenix Consulting Group in Huntsville. He sold that in 2009, a 550-person firm by the time he sold it. And then I love the fact that on his resume, he says his most important role, though, is as the founder and chairman of the board for the Elm Foundation, providing educational, housing, and other services to those striving for self-sufficiency. Very cool. John, welcome to the show. We're glad you're here.
Glad to be here.
Oh, let me turn your microphone on. Hey, John, welcome.
What a great idea. Yeah. I wish I had one of those at home.
And then also with us is Missy Hanks. And Missy serves as the executive director for the Elm Foundation, took that position in 2021. She's been, though, with the Elm Foundation since 2013, where she's been a case manager all that time. Her bio reads just like a heart. Says she's passionate about supportive, effective charity and resource delivery through intensive case management, assisting individuals and families to set their goals. Native of Huntsville, she got her Bachelor of Science degree in Criminal Justice, as well as a Bachelor of Arts degree in Spanish from Auburn University, War Eagle. And Missy's here with us, the both of them, Missy and John, talking about the Elm Foundation. Welcome to Right Side Radio.
Thank you. Terrific to be here.
Well, we're glad you're here. And so I want to make sure that the folks get a sort of a rough in of what it is y'all do, what you stand for. I've been talking about you on the air, and I said, you know, the last couple of weeks, you're going to hear them pretty soon.
Well, I hope it was good.
It was
we're
all
glad
good.
To be here.
We are glad you're here. Let me do this. And I'll start over here. John, why the Elm Foundation? What's the deal? You had a long career. You could be retired. You could be fishing right now. But instead, you list your most important thing in life as working as the chairman of the board and the founder. Why are you doing this? What's it about?
I came from, as they say, humble beginnings. There were seven of us in our family when my father left at my age 12. I was the oldest. And were it not for people, friends of my mother's, who demonstrated that they could come in and help us in those areas where we needed help. I mean, each one of the kids, we all had jobs and all that other stuff to care for ourselves and to learn how to work, which is not something that everybody gets the opportunity to learn.
Right.
And moving towards self-sufficiency as a family rather than any government handouts. I mean, long ago and far away, back when the Earth's crust was cooling and I was growing up, you know, there wasn't a lot of this, oh, the government will take care of everything for you. You know, this was neighbors, this was friends and so on. And I always had wanted to be able to pay those people back a little bit.
How about that?
And when we came to have some business success, you know, it occurred to me that these are resources that have been placed in our hands. Many people look at things of that character as blessings, and the blessings translate into a house in Vail or you know, a yacht or trips around the world every 3 weeks, you know, that kind of thing. But if there are resources that we can apply for the benefit of others to in turn benefit even more. So it becomes cyclical. You know, if we get somebody who can really grow and move into self-sufficiency, they turn toward service as well. And they get the idea that it's not all about government, but it could be about me moving somebody else from there. And we've seen that repeated time and time again.
And y'all founded it in what year?
We started it in 2010.
Okay.
We'd been doing this on kind of an ad hoc basis whenever people would come to our attention who could benefit from exposure to education, exposure to the right side of the world, if you will, because if you're oriented toward government being the primary benefactor, that's the wrong answer. I mean, because you're creating a dependency relationship that becomes generational, and I can't imagine anything worse than generational poverty encouraged by government programs that don't work.
No, I completely agree, and thank you for that. There's a conservative viewpoint, but let me ask you, Missy, you've been with the program now since 2013. But
yes.
Your own resume, and I didn't call it out yet because I was going to bring it up now, you've worked for a number of different state agencies. DHR being one and others, and not that they don't have a place, because there are times when that kind of intervention with the force of law may be necessary, but now you've been for 10 years with this program. How'd you get involved? Why'd you stay with it for 10 years and all?
Yeah, so in working in those agencies, I felt like I wasn't really helping people. And so you'll see, I bounced back and forth between doing some legal work in the district attorney's office and social services, because I would get so frustrated that I would just have to leave. So I had told myself, honestly, that I would not do this again. But when I was approached...
Shouldn't have said that.
I know, right? Yeah, that's right. There were other plans. But because, in my opinion, they wanted to do things so differently and do it the right way to really help people, to move out of poverty and move out of dependency. So that's what brought me back in.
Yeah. Well, so you got a heart for people. You just found the best place to put it to work.
Yes.
Well, and I appreciate it. And, you know, my own background, a big chunk of my background, it's all been service related in some capacity, but I spent the first 10 years out of college working full time in youth ministry and youth counseling. And what you just said a moment ago really struck a chord, because I was working in youth counseling for a treatment center for several years and felt like I was being told to heal them from the inside out, or excuse me, the outside in, as opposed to the inside out. Mm-hmm. And I went into ministry after that. So I get what it's like to be doing something you feel called to, but you're in the wrong spot to do it.
Right.
All right. That being said, Elm Foundation. I mean, what I love is the fact that y'all are individualized. You provide accountability. You walk with someone through the issues. And you're looking at self-sufficiency. You're looking at self-worth. But how does this, I mean, so give us soup to nuts, like a little description here within about 2 to 3 minutes of how this comes together for an individual.
Yes, sir. So someone is actually referred to us, and they can be referred from another social service agency, clergy, a community leader, somebody that is willing to write their name, sign their name on a referral form, that this person is looking to better themselves and is willing to put in the time and work to do it. So once we get those referrals, then we bring in a person, we have an interview, an assessment, and we are looking for someone that is willing to be accountable. And sometimes they've never had to do that, and we totally understand that, but in reviewing their needs, that is taken into account. And so the Elm Foundation is governed by committees, so we look at the needs that the person has, how can we help? We have a grants committee that will look at those needs, and of course, we have a budget just like everybody else. Are we going to be able to fulfill our promises on our side?
Right.
And then the person sits down with our case manager, and they actually build what we call a development plan. So what does this person need to move from dependency to self-sufficiency? And we divide that into little bites, and then we provide support, whether it's moral support, whether it's resources, in helping that person progress towards self-sufficiency.
And they got to meet those milestones.
They absolutely do.
And if they don't, they know that the chances are that they're going to be reexamined in terms of their mm-hmm. potential
okay.
and their willingness and their grit, if you will.
Yeah.
And at that point, there is a determination as to whether or not they're going to want to continue and that we're going to want to continue with them, because we're not interested in wasting time or effort or energy. We're not just there to write a check and have somebody go cash it and go do whatever they want with it and come back two days later and say, bring me another check. That just doesn't happen.
Sometimes we can provide assistance or help that doesn't require writing a check at all, honestly. It's just depending on that person's needs, what they need.
And I would imagine, too, and we'll talk about this after this next break, but I would imagine, too, there's times, because you guys have developed a great community network. Mm-hmm. One of the things that's really impressed me, my own daughter has talked about it, is that y'all have the ability to pull resources within the community outside of your own organization into a network that I'm sure you can make referrals to and referrals from.
Yes, sir. That's the idea.
All right. Well, tell you what, we're going to take a break right now. When we get back from this break, I want to jump into your ability to rally community as well as just working with the individuals that y'all are called to.
Yes, sir. Right? Sounds great.
Absolutely. All right. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. That flew by. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Saving the world one soundbite at a time. All right. Hey, listen, we're going to go right back now to a discussion. We're sitting right here in studio with Missy Hanks and John Nolan. John being the founder of the Elm Foundation. Missy's the executive director. And talking about the things that they do. And let me ask you guys a question. My daughter is in Huntsville, and she... I was talking to her just last night, and she was telling me how she goes to your, and I've forgotten the name, Community Connections meetings. Yeah. And she's like, well, tell her she doesn't have to bring the gong with her, you know, because you apparently gong people in the meetings.
Want to, yeah.
But all that to say, I'm hearing, you know, secondhand through a family member about your ability to build community. So we're talking about programs for the individual to better the community, but you're also rallying the community to help with issues and to build networking. So how does that work? What do y'all do? And I guess which one of you wants to go first? John, you want to kick that off?
Well, I would just intro that and let Missy speak to it particularly, but there are two critical ingredients. One of them is a software package, if you will. It's called Charity Tracker, and we've got several hundred now participants in that who regularly are enabled to identify needs in the community that they can perhaps satisfy. So it may be somebody sitting and they pull up the charity tracker thing and it shows we need We're at the Huntsville Hospital, and we've got 60 people in the ICU because of COVID, and they can't be visited by anybody else. Anybody got any ideas about how we can get maybe a bunch of iPads? And one guy in a company talks to the rest of the people in the company. 2 hours later, there's 10 iPads contributed to the COVID.
That's awesome.
That actually happened.
And that actually
I figured it did.
Yeah, it did.
It was too detailed not to be real.
Yeah. Right.
And as a result of that, you see this happening all over the community because you've got that number of assets looking at what the needs are that can be readily identifiable. And then there's the community connections, which actually brings these people together so they've got more of a face-to-face. Missy can talk about how those were both created.
Yeah, go ahead.
And they're mostly her fault.
Well, no, not at all. So while we do provide the direct services, you know, to each individual that comes to Elm, we do have the community education and collaboration side of Elm Foundation as well, because we feel like, you know, we can't do it all. No social service agency can do it all. So we should be working together for a myriad of reasons, so that we can share resources, so that we can exponentially increase the resources and the effect that we have on the family, the person that we're serving. Of course, there's always the happy byproduct, I guess you would say, of there's also a reduction in duplication of what services are offered in the community. You know, you don't need 10 agencies doing the same thing. But John is right. So our idea was that to bring the Charity Tracker software to Huntsville, which is a database that was developed right here in Florence, Alabama, not far from here.
That's outstanding.
Right. At the request of, I guess it was the United Way over in Florence after Hurricane Katrina, so that they could better track and keep up with their resources that they were providing. So we brought that to Huntsville in an effort to have the local agencies give them the ability to collaborate and share information and resources. But we also felt like it was important that we developed relationships so that we could work together more
effectively.
Relationships
make everything work.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And so that's why we have a face-to-face meeting every month. Each month has a different theme. And we bring everybody to our downtown library. We serve breakfast, and then we have a meeting based on that theme. We bring in local experts, panelists, you name it. And that's how we learn one another and develop trust and work together more effectively.
Well, that's huge. I mean, I think it's by the way, what I love is it's not so that y'all can ring your own bell. It's so that you can just bring people together. And all the bells are ringing, if you know what I'm saying.
Sure.
I think that's key. Now, listen, we're going to wind up. I mean, this is flying by, but we're going to take a break here in just about a minute. When we come back from that break, I think one of the things I want to start digging into are some of the more mechanics of the plan again. But I would love for the audience to hear some victory stories, because I know you've got them.
Yes, sir.
I've seen your website. I can tell you've got them. but give them a sort of a potpourri, if you will, of stuff that's happened through Elm. You got a track record. You've been out there in the community doing stuff. And I preach on this show all the time about the fact that it's got to have to be people doing things in their own community for us to see true systemic change. And if you want to be a conservative, then get out there and be a conservative.
Yes, sir.
If you want to speak to an issue, then just find your moment and speak to it. And that's sort of what you've done with creating Elm. But what I love, the fact is, you got a track record of successful work. So I want to hear some of that when we get back, all right? All right, hey, folks, we're right here in studio right now with the Elm Foundation. Let me just tell you, too, you've heard me say it multiple times, that this is about people getting busy on what it means to give a hand up as opposed to a hand out, and truly walking people through the process with accountability, by the way. And if you want to know more while we're at the break, go check out their website. It's ElmHSV. It's in Elm Huntsville, ElmHSV.org. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We will be right back. Yeah.
And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative, just plain right, covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation. That would be Alabama. And I mean, this show sends its signal like way on down south of Birmingham, up north of Huntsville, Tuscaloosa, back to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, even Mississippi, thrown in just for good measure. All right, hey, back here in the studio right now with new friends, John Nolan, founder of the Elm Foundation, and Missy Hanks, the executive director. And we're talking about all the different aspects of their program. Now, let me recap a couple things. So first of all, this is not a government-run program. Y'all are a 501c3.
Correct.
Supported in part, John, on your own family's efforts.
Yes.
Based upon, you know, your own ability to have run a business for years, you now have a foundation. That being said, you're a 501, so I assume you take charitable contributions.
Yes, Correct. Sir. We love them.
What I do love, by the way, is that every dollar given by an outside donor, for the most part, goes to programs.
Right.
Because your administrative costs are covered by the foundation.
Correct. Yes, sir.
So, I mean, that's huge. And having been I'm still a 501c3. This is a 501, but then also I've, you know, been in 501s in ministry. What a great deal that is. So I applaud that. That being said, you run individualized programs, walking people through the steps of self-sufficiency, you know, grant making on things that make a difference, like education or housing or betterment of life.
Child care.
Transportation.
Yes, sir.
Which is a huge thing.
You name it.
Oh, yeah. And then all of that's with accountability,
yes,
which
sir.
Is so often missing in government programs.
Right.
All right. What I want to know is, can you give us a couple of stories? And we were talking during the break. I want to make sure I reiterate. I've said it on the show multiple times. ELM, why the name? It stands for Expect Little Miracles. That's a cool name. So give us some storylines. Tell the audience about some of the experiences y'all have had with people.
Well, actually, before the foundation was created, my wife's friend was the neighbor of a woman who came to the United States from Ethiopia with her then 7-year-old son in an arranged marriage, and it just went south immediately because he was just highly abusive and they needed to get him out of there. And so she called my wife and said, well, what are we going to do? And inside of about 2 hours or so, we had gotten a bunch of pickup trucks and we actually arranged and found an apartment not too far away from a good school for her son to go to and for her to go to. But she had no marketable skills. A friend of mine, a medical doctor, we got her a job, supplemented her income at the doctor's office as a clerk. And then she said, I can do more than this. Hmm. And she wanted to become involved in the medical community. And the next thing she wanted to do was to become a CNA, a certified nurse assistant.
Oh, yeah.
So she worked in 3 or 4 different nursing homes during that period of time. And then she said, I can do more than this. I want to be an LPN. So she pulled back from her working as much. We supplemented it in the meantime for her housing and transportation. And her son was getting tutored and whatnot. And that continued while she went through, got her LPN. Then she decided after a couple of years that she wanted to be an RN. By that time, the foundation was in existence, and we helped her get her RN. And now she's in charge of a kidney dialysis center at Emory University Hospital. And her son is a third-year medical student now, having gotten all the way through almost on his own dime. I mean, he went to Amherst on a full ride. That's at like $85,000 a year and finished at the top of his class. He got accepted into 4 different medical schools, high-end medical schools, and he chose that one because he wants to go back to Africa and do pediatric orthopedic.
So did that become like the model in your mind of what ELM was going to be?
It kind of expanded it.
Yeah.
It gave us an idea of how that could actually work better. And that was right around the time that we founded the organization. Because, I mean, you know, frankly speaking, from a business perspective, I mean, there was no financial benefit to us or anybody else who would want to help us with this stuff. And so got to be the 501c3. Now we could make a contribution to whatever they needed. And it was smart business to do that in light of the tax advantages. is.
But I'll say this, though, too, and this is what I say on my show all the time to folks, is that the reality is what you did was also community-minded. So yeah. you were looking, I know you were looking at her personally and what it yep. would mean for her personally, but by doing so, you also made a dent in your own community because she's now a productive member Absolutely. Of society doing far more than she ever could have done otherwise.
And she owns three houses over there that Look she rents that. Out.
See, that's the American dream.
I mean, yeah, really. That's cool. I mean, the whole, I'm an unapologetic capitalist.
There you go.
And so that kind of filters through all of this as well. Personal responsibility. If you see something, do something. It's not just see something, say something. It's see something, do something.
Yeah.
That I think is a little bit different than the governmental message. Missy, why don't you?
Yeah, give me another one.
And so when we say that we're helping folks get jobs, we mean highly employable folks. You know, they allow us to put the effort and the funds toward people to make them highly employable, like John illustrated. But there's so many stories. One story, we had a young woman referred to us who was living in her car, going to high school, doing hair so that she could have some money in her pocket. But a really good student, and she had that grit, and she wanted to go off to college, but she just didn't have the resources to do that. So yeah. we assisted her in doing that. We helped her with some tuition payments, with some living money, some housing, and there's so many. But she ended up getting her degree in accounting, and so now she works for a large accounting firm up on the East Coast. We have so many of the stories. They're just amazing.
From living in her car.
Yeah.
To now working at a major accounting firm on the East Coast.
Right.
Well, see, that's the kind of stuff that needs to happen more often. Mm-hmm. And I look at this and I think, okay, there is no way in the world that government could or should, for that matter, be responsible for fixing everything that y'all just described. In fact, the truth is, society needs to be filled up with a sense of personal benevolence and people who are willing to do, like you said a moment ago. And yet more and more our society is beginning to lend itself towards, the government will take care of it.
Yeah,
exactly. Let's find some more spending.
Well, one size does not fit all.
No, it doesn't. No, it doesn't. And that is absolutely true.
And the other side of it is that once somebody comes out of the tunnel, if you will, they have the opportunity to also be celebrated. If you will, you know, they can say to somebody else, I've been there, I've done that, got the tattoos or whatever. You can do it too. Mm-hmm. And that, I think, is an important element. You know, so that this young woman as an accountant, you know, young African-American girl, you know, not a lot of young American, African-American accountant women working in Boston, Massachusetts.
How about that?
And yet she can say to somebody else who's been in the same situation, you can get there because I did it. And that's the American way, is exemplary performance from limited assets, if you will.
Yeah, yeah. Well, so let me ask you this. You guys have the program. Mm-hmm. You have a case manager. File on somebody as they come in. They're referred to you. They're walking through the program with you. What about, I mean, do you have volunteers? Do you have people that do things with the organization? How does it work? If somebody wants to get involved and says, man, that's for me, that's what I've been looking for, how do I plug in? What do you say?
Absolutely. They need to come see us. Okay. They need to come to the office and see us.
Y'all, come on down.
That's exactly right. We do. We need mentors. Because, you know, as you know, we can't meet every need. So we love to hook up the folks that we're serving with mentors so that they can gain experience from others.
Well, I mean, I can tell you right now, having spent a lot of time in volunteer organizations, I used to have a sign on the wall above my desk when I used to work for a ministry called Young Life. And I was the area director for Young Life in the Gadsden area for 7 years. And I had a sign on the wall above my desk that said, volunteers are a gift from God. Mm-hmm. And it's true.
Absolutely.
Because it's great to have the paid staff. It's wonderful to have an office with a phone and a computer. But there are days when you can't get it all done.
Absolutely.
The need outruns the ability of the single staff person or the few staff you have to get it done. It's the volunteers that make it happen sometimes.
And that's absolutely true.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I tell you what I'd like to do is this. Boomer, let's go ahead and take the break about a minute earlier so we come back and have a decent wrap-up on what we're doing. But we're here in studio right now with John Nolan and Missy Hanks from the Elm Foundation. That's ELM, Elm Foundation, out of Huntsville. They've got opportunities in the future, maybe even to expand into other areas of the state. But I'm going to tell you, this is something worth looking at. Their website, Elm, ELMHSV, as in Elm Huntsville, ELMHSV.org. We'll be right back with more Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. I've got Missy Hanks, John Nolan, the Elm Foundation. Really, I mean, I really appreciate y'all being here in studio today. You could have called in. It would not have done justice to what we're talking about. But let me ask you, John, during the break, you and I were talking there briefly, and you mentioned that metrics are a big deal. I mean, you this is not something where you put money on it, so to speak, and then, you know, you hope to see something happen, but if it does, maybe you never find out. No, you track this stuff.
Absolutely.
You're a businessman. Talk about it.
Absolutely. And it benefits on multiple levels. One, you can show somebody who is a participant where they are vis-a-vis their model, their participant plan that's been worked out and that they've agreed to. But it's also more than that. When Missy started the community connections piece, there's also board training, for example. Training the boards of other social services organizations, if you will.
Yeah.
And by giving them that, you know, suddenly the lights start to go on. We say, okay, we have metrics that identify A, B, and C. This has been achieved, this has been achieved, this has been achieved. And they kind of, okay. We say, it's not 12,000 kids played basketball for an hour and a half over the course of the year. That there's no outcome there. That's not really, that might be a metric for somebody.
Yeah.
But for most business guys, it's not. And if it's a business guy, he's saying, I run my business on the basis of metrics. And yeah, now we're going to have certain metrics for the performance of those people who are dealing with our participants, whoever their participants might be.
So you're tracking this stuff.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And encouraging other boards to look at it and say, you know, that might not be a bad idea for us to start doing that. Holding people accountable, not only the people who work for them, but the people who are their participants in whatever programs they have.
Yeah, it shows that you got follow-through.
Exactly. And then, you know, does that appeal to a donor? Oh, no. A donor doesn't. He'd prefer that you just throw your money away, right? That's because that's what he's doing, you know? And you know, the kind of people who are bought into this kind of thing expect those things.
Yeah.
And those are expectations.
I think it also shows stewardship on your part.
It absolutely is. It absolutely is. Because otherwise, we're just going through them all.
Well, let me switch over to you, Missy. So, in a few minutes here, you were also telling me during the break that one of the interesting things, maybe a metric, is that you guys, John was just saying, you train other boards, you train other groups, but you're also training them to follow what you called your earn it model. First of all, clarify what the earn it model is. And then if you wouldn't mind, tell that refrigerator story.
Oh, sure. So the earn it model is just asking a participant that wants to receive a service or a good, asking them to earn that by expending energy. So maybe that is just a small task or whatever that would be, but you're asking them to expend energy and earn what they get. So a good example of another agency, one of the agencies that we have trained, we call our program the Pathway to Sustainability.
Right.
And we provide training on the software, the Charity Tracker software. So we give them the tool to do all these things, and then we ask them to collaborate with other agencies in Madison County. We ask them to document everything they're doing in the system. We ask them to make referrals. And then ultimately, we're asking them to track the outcomes of their efforts. So in doing so, one of the agencies that went through our program, we were really excited, and they were excited to tell us of an outcome that they had, which was a lady came into their agency and needed a refrigerator. And they did have a refrigerator in their thrift store, but they asked her to earn it by working 20 hours in their thrift store, and they put it on paper like a contract, and she in fact did come in and work and earn her refrigerator, and they were excited about that.
There you
go. But moreover, she realized, she came back to them later and said, "Hey, I really liked working. Would you be able to hire me?" And they did. They were able to hire her first part time, and to go to work in their thrift store. And I believe the last I heard is now she's working full time.
How about that?
So it awakened that in her, that I have the ability to earn, I can do this. And that's what we're looking for, to awaken that in people and give them that purpose.
And by the way, other people want me to work.
Yes.
Like somebody sees in me something worth having around.
Mm-hmm.
Well, listen, I mean, I think, so one of the coolest things, I mean, is not just that you're changing lives, but there's not a turf war with you, is what I'm seeing. There's not this, we're Elm Foundation, everybody get out of our way, don't get into my space, I do my thing, you do your thing.
No.
You guys are doing your thing, changing people's lives individually with your own case management, but then you're out there showing other people how to do it and equipping them to do it too, because you're apparently not as worried about having the turf, if you know what I mean.
Absolutely not. And I was born and raised in Huntsville. I love my community. I want it to be better.
Yeah.
And the Elm Foundation and our board allows us to do that work.
Well, that's just very cool, and I really appreciate you guys again being here in studio, giving us the opportunity to hear it. And I will say too, John, I think one of the things that's interesting and folks need to know is this is your family's all in.
Absolutely,
I mean, this has been something. It's not just you; it's you, your wife. And you've got grown kids who are involved.
Right. My son is a teacher in an inner city school in New Jersey, and he has a scholarship fund that he can distribute to help kids do everything from get a computer.
Yeah.
Because the computer that he got at school got stolen.
Yeah.
The day he got it, you know, that kind of thing. And there's just a certain amount of that, and our daughter in San Diego is doing the same thing. So it's that set of expectations that there are people out there who have a need and will be able to fill it.
Outstanding. So you grew up in Huntsville?
I did.
All right. Where'd you go to high school?
Huntsville High School. Panthers.
I went to Grissom.
Ew.
Times.
Oh. Ew.
Yuck.
Yeah.
Well, that's where our kids all went.
Oh, good. Okay.
And our grandkids
as well. My husband
went
to Grissom. Yeah, my husband and one of my children.
Outstanding. Well, home folks doing home things. And
right.
I really appreciate the fact that y'all have been here today. All right, listen. All right, folks out there, all you right side ruffians, you know that we do this periodically. We take a step aside from public policy and yammering about government or talking about what's happening with, you know, any number of things in politics. And just step back and remind ourselves that there are things worth knowing about that are happening right here in your own backyard. And so I want to encourage you, this is one of them. Elm Foundation, they've been partnered with us for the last couple of months, and they are making a difference in people's lives, but they're also making a difference in other organizations that make differences in people's lives. It's a force multiplier, we call it in the military. So that being said, check them out. Their website is Elm, ELMHSV.org. That's ELMHSV.org, the Elm Foundation. And I thank you guys again. Missy, John, appreciate you. Thanks for being here.
My pleasure.
Our honor to be here.
Well, it's our honor. We need to get you a Right Side Ruffian t-shirt or something before you leave. All right, boom, we got a break. We'll do it. All right, folks, y'all stay tuned. Coming up next, the Grand Council with Jeff Poore, Dale Jackson. We will be right back.